The crowd in Boston's Faneuil Hall rising to its feet to give one last cheer for the presidential campaign of John F. Kerry, junior senator from Massachusetts, who has offered his congratulations to President Bush. As you heard, he was somewhat hoarse and somewhat subdued. His running mate, John Edwards, has joined him now on the stage at Faneuil Hall. They're embracing members of their families as this campaign comes to an end. You're listening to live coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington as our live special coverage on NPR News continues. You heard Senator Kerry there finishing up the last business of his campaign, the sad and melancholy affair of telling his supporters that there was no way that even once all the provisional votes were counted in the state of Ohio, there was no way to overcome the lead that President Bush had established in the race. He said all of those votes would be counted, but even so, the arithmetic did not add up in his favor. There was no way to win Ohio, he said, and therefore the race was lost. I would not have given up the fight, he said, if there was a hope we could prevail. He then called for unity with the re-elected administration in the days ahead. He said we must find common cause without remorse or rancor. Well, joining us now is NPR's Don Gagne. He's at the Bush-Cheney Victory Party at the Ronald Reagan Building in downtown Washington, D.C., where the president is expected to be addressing his supporters in about 40 minutes from now. Don, good to speak with you again.
Hi, Neil.
Was the speech by Senator Kerry available there in the Ronald Reagan Building?
It was indeed. People are gathering here. A lot of them were here last night, went home, took a nap, and are back now, showered and with fresh clothing on. But there are giant video screens, projection video screens, and they watched the speech, and it's interesting. It's almost like there was no reaction. People were quiet. They watched it. They did cheer when Senator Kerry officially announced that he had called the president and that he had conceded the race. But they just stood and watched it played out. Then the minute he finished, this music that you hear in the background now cranked up, and people are waving American flags and getting ready to see the speech that they had all hoped to see from the president last night, that formal acceptance speech from a president looking ahead to a second term.
Well, as you mentioned, there has to be a degree of exhaustion in the crowd there, but obviously
Absolutely. Celebrating
as well.
Exactly. I mean, people are really thrilled that he is doing this here and not just making an announcement at the White House, at the Rose Garden. A lot of them have put in a lot of hours on this campaign. A lot of them put in a lot of hours here yesterday alone. So there's a good deal of excitement. And even though it's much later than they had hoped, it's a day later than they had hoped, it looks like a big Bush-Cheney campaign rally.
One more question, Don. And that had to, you said there was a cheer when Senator Kerry officially conceded, but no reaction to his call for unity in the days ahead.
No, it was people watched it. The thing is, last night when we were here, every time John Edwards or John Kerry's image appeared up on the giant TV screens, you heard boos and things like that. There was none of that. People listened respectfully. They paid attention. But the only time they really expressed anything as a crowd, as a group, was when he announced the official concession.
Well, Don Gagne, thanks. And we'll be back with you, I guess, in about 35 minutes or so when President Bush is expected to make his speech and arrive there at the Ronald Reagan Building in downtown Washington. And thanks very much, Don.
All right, we'll stand by.
NPR's Don Gagne from the Ronald Reagan Building in downtown Washington. Exit polls yesterday showed there was one key motivator for Republican voters beyond terrorism, the economy, or the war in Iraq. It was called moral values, but the question didn't define what moral values are. Here's Andrew Kohut of the Pew Research Center.
That's the problem. I suspect that if moral values were defined in terms of specifics, we might have had a different kind of response. And to a certain extent, I think moral values also might be code.
Code for what? Abortion? Gay marriage? Christianity? How do you think moral values affected this election? How do you define them? Give us a call. We have two phone numbers today. If you voted for President Bush or might have, the number is 800-344-3893. Again, 800-344-3893. If you voted for Senator Kerry, or would have, the number is 800-344-3864. Again, 800-344-3864. Joining us now to talk about the role of values in this election is Jean Bethke Elshtain, professor of social and political ethics at the University of Chicago, on the road this afternoon. We thank her for taking the time to join us. Good to speak with you again.
Thank you, Neil.
Were you surprised at the number of people who gave that moral values answer as the most important reason that they voted yesterday?
Not at all. Not at all. I've been saying for a number of years that we really mistake and misunderstand American voters if we think that pocketbook issues are going to prevail, which is, of course, common wisdom among many political scientists, but that instead Americans are animated by complex cluster of questions, including this admittedly amorphous moral values. But I suspect that if you started to break it down into a series of particular concerns, it would have to do with a number of very volatile issues, our continuing travail over abortion, the whole question of embryonic stem cells and their use, which means their destruction to harvest stem cells for research. It would include clearly the issue about marriage, gay marriage, is marriage just between men and women, but not just those. It would also include, I think, a deeper sense of a kind of moral uneasiness about the direction the country is going. Too much pornography, too much explicit sex, too much, even too much commercialization and marketing to young children as an explicit moral concern. So I think it's a whole range of issues.
Why, some people might ask, why are those defined as moral values while issues like social justice, issues like peace, those are not?
Well, I think that those are defined as moral values, but I suspect that issues of social justice, people tend to reason like this, that the way those issues are addressed is going to emerge from debates over and the fine-tuning of certain public policy interventions. So there's the moral dimension doesn't come out quite as clearly, I think, or as pointedly or as poignantly. But I think on these other moral issues that there's a deep fear that many of these questions, if you will, are going to be simply taken away from people by the resort to the courts, by judicial fiat. That, of course, has been one of the continuing vexations on the abortion question. Shouldn't people have had an opportunity to vote, you know, in their respective legislatures about this? So that, I suspect, is perhaps the difference. People know that there are going to be votes that have to do with tax policy and economic policy and all the rest. But about these other issues, I think there's a worry we won't get to have a say on them.
And, of course, the next president of the United States, which will, of course, now be George Bush, the next president will be able to appoint perhaps as many as four justices to the Supreme Court of the United States, and perhaps that illness by Chief Justice Rehnquist played more of a part in this election than we may have thought.
You know, it may well have. I think America, we underestimate American voters rather consistently. I think they pay a lot of attention to what's going on once the election draws nearer and nearer. And I think the worry, again, that the Supreme Court might simply take a whole range of issues out of their hands rather than say, you know what, this isn't a matter for us, it should go back to the states and so on, that undoubtedly played a role with many people. But I suspect, Neil, that it was this more generalized sense of uneasiness that the moral fiber of the nation is unraveled a bit. And for a number of reasons, I think President Bush was seen as someone who understood that, and Senator Kerry was seen as someone who did not.
And we invite you to join this conversation as we await the president's victory speech, which is coming at the top of this hour. At least that's when it's scheduled.
All right.
Bush supporter is 800-344-3893. Again, 800-344-3893. Kerry supporters can call 800-344-3864. How do you define moral values? What part do you think they played in this election? And we'll begin with Bruce on the Republican line from Waltham, Massachusetts.
Good afternoon. Although I dial the Republican line, I guess I should open by saying I voted both Democratic and Republican over various presidential elections, although I did vote for Bush this particular time. I am the one of five people in all of Massachusetts that apparently voted for Bush. But I don't really think this was about moral values at all. And I know this is a popular topic today in the pundits and the polls and so on, but I think really that it's sort of masking a lot of other issues. I mean, in my case, I'm for stem cell research. I'm favorable toward gay marriage. I have gay friends who are actually married. I'm pro-choice. To me, it's more about what you feel the role of the government is. And I think in people I've talked to, one of the central things that you expect your government to do is to protect you. And I don't really expect them to be in my bedroom or my neighbor's bedroom or talk about, you know, things that are happening with women's bodies or whatever. But I do expect them to protect me from external forces, which would include terrorists or other countries or so on. And, you know, obviously that's a very hot issue and can be debated a lot of ways, and I won't go into all that. But since the topic was on moral issues, that really wasn't an issue for me at all. I mean, my personal feeling is that even if Bush comes out against for a constitutional amendment against gay marriage, it simply isn't tenable to make it pass. I mean, you would require all the states to pass it essentially to change the Constitution, and I just don't feel that that's something that's likely to happen. So I was able to let that issue go. In fact, I would say I was totally against Bush's moral stand on some of these things, but I voted for him because I didn't feel he could actually affect that change, because I think it's coming anyway.
Okay, and we should point out, I think moral values was number one in people's response, but I think the war on terrorism was number two, and then on down the line.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think Bruce is very articulate in offering his reasons for why he voted for President Bush, really, despite the president's views on some of these other issues. But I do think we have to give some credence, clearly, to people's self-characterizations of what were the most important issues for them. And clearly they had an opportunity to distinguish between moral values questions, economic questions, and the war peace questions, the war on terrorism. And all of these were important, but what is surprising everyone this morning is just 10 this afternoon how important the moral values separated from the security protection and terrorism issues proved to be. And here, let me respond for a moment to President candidate Kerry's concession speech. It struck me that he, during the campaign, lost some real opportunities to precisely do the unifying that he called for in his very graceful speech. That is to say, for example, at the Democratic National Convention, when apropos the whole debate about the morality of creating and destroying embryos for research, he simply left the moral debate aside and said, we need a president who believes in science. And then went on from there, and sort of, you know, my faith tells me one thing, but science tells me another. And I think those are the kinds of issues that trouble people, that they want some acknowledgement of their moral uneasiness. I don't think that Kerry would have to say, I absolutely agree with those of you who think we should never use embryonic stem cells, but I think what people want is some recognition that there is a moral question, just as there's a moral question in the abortion debate over the moral status of the fetus or of the unborn child. So I think just acknowledging that would have helped him tremendously and helped to allay the worries of many people that he was simply, he was simply deaf to these concerns.
If I could just make one more point before I leave here.
Sure.
Obviously, it's valid to consider the self-described characteristics of people in the exit polls.
Yeah.
The only comment I would say is if the exit polls were accurate, John Kerry would be president today. So I think another thing you're looking at in the day-after analysis is really how accurate are the exit polls? Obviously, they have a great deal of predictive validity, but I'm not sure this is a level of accuracy when you have roughly 59 million people voting for Bush. I think it's hard to characterize them as, you know, mostly falling in for one issue or another issue. You walk out of the polls, you're busy, you're trying to go somewhere, someone hits you with a question, you kind of throw the first thing off the top of your head and you keep walking.
I'm told by the professionals that the exit polls were accurate. They were just accurate for the early voters.
Yes.
Other people voted later.
Yes.
Well, but that's not how they're characterized when they're represented, are they?
No, they're generally characterized as early exit polls, preliminary results. But Bruce, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And we do have an election update. There was one outstanding Senate race that was yet to be decided. NPR has now projected that Lisa Murkowski, the incumbent senator appointed to the office by her father, now Governor Frank Murkowski of Alaska. Lisa Murkowski has triumphed and defeated former Alaska Governor Tony Knowles, and that race is now over. And the Republican majority in the United States Senate, they now have 55 seats in the United States Senate. A gain of 4 from the previous United States Senate. Anyway, we're going to continue our conversation with Jean Bethke Elstein, and let's get another caller on the line. This is Stephen. Stephen's calling from Ames, Iowa, on the Democratic line.
Good afternoon. Preface this. I'm actually not Democratic. I'm an independent voter. However, I did vote for Kerry this election.
Okay.
And what I'm worried about, and you know, you were mentioning moral values, is that what I've seen is a growing divide within the United States between the Christian right and what I would consider a more moderate citizens. And I'm actually quite, I'm quite frightened by the possibility of what's going to happen inside of the United States with what I would consider, rather than a Republican, I would say that we have more of a neocon dominance inside the Senate and the House currently. And what concerns me the most now is that, since Kerry lost, is that I foresee a lot of the our civil rights, basic civil rights, becoming severely eroded, and more so than they have been over the last 4 years. So I think that the question that was asked about moral values was quite relevant, and I think that it's kind of a specter that's going to haunt us for quite a while.
Stephen, it seems to me that, and again, I understand your worries, but I think we make a mistake if we think that the issues of moral values somehow are limited to those that are part of what's called the Christian right. That is, I think this moral uneasiness that I talked about is very widely shared. For example, the leading journal of liberal opinion, named the Christian Century, which is a journal that opposes the war in Iraq and very strong on social justice issues, against capital punishment and so on, nevertheless expressed in an editorial very strong opposition to the use of embryonic stem cells, calling it an unprecedented instrumentalization of human life. So I think that these kinds of issues affect many millions of people outside any purview of a narrow segment of the population. Now, that doesn't speak to some of your direct political concerns, but I do think that we shouldn't, that there's a way of evading the moral concerns when we limit them to one group and say it's that one group and they're in danger of taking over. These are more widespread kinds of concerns, and I think we're really obliged to think about what's going on as we reflect on them, rather than to sort of deflect the issues by locating them in one group that we strongly oppose, and then we don't think reflectively about the issues, the moral issues, the moral values questions themselves.
Let me, if Stephen doesn't mind, frame that just another way. The president, throughout his campaign, talked about his resolution and his firmness, his adherence, his certainty, and that this was based to some degree in his faith.
Yes.
Obviously, many voters found that reassuring. I think other voters, Kerry supporters, I think it was Senator Kerry pointed out in one of the debates, you can be certain and be wrong.
No, I think that's right, and I believe that it's the obligation of any president, as he's discussing his resoluteness and his firmness and his convictions, to acknowledge always that which is certainly part of the tradition that the president shares, that it's quite possible for weak and frail human beings to be wrong, and that one always has to be prepared to acknowledge where one has made mistakes and to acknowledge where one has gone wrong, and that's very much part of the Christian tradition. So I do think that that's terribly important. We have many models of presidents who have precisely done that. Abraham Lincoln perhaps being the most significant, when he said, I confess that I have not controlled events, they have controlled me. And who looked for a certain, embodied a certain humility when he looked at the carnage of the Civil War. So I do believe that it's important for leaders to be resolute That's absolutely true. But it's also important for them to acknowledge that presidents, like anybody else, can err.
And that's one of my concerns, is that when we have a president who steadfastly refuses to even pretty much acknowledge the possibility of error, especially on such issues as when we're talking about social justice, we're talking about a war that the rest of the world, or a fair chunk of the rest of the world, has found our reasonings for going to war to be very flimsy.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a president who is now in the face of what would be considered logical analysis, he fails to acknowledge that even the possibility of making an error. I find that to be a very serious and very dangerous character fault. Mm-hmm. that I would more likely ascribe to someone like Stalin or a dictator type personality, where megalomaniacal tendencies tend to keep you away from the possibility that you make any errors whatsoever.
Stephen, I'm going to have to stop you there because we're running out of time, and I think a lot of people. Thank you very much for the call. I'm not quite sure about the comparison to Joseph Stalin, and Jean Bethke Elstein. We wanted to thank you for stopping off on the road this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. I'm sorry it's a cell phone. Probably the quality wasn't that great, but thanks very much. Good to talk to you
again. It's the quality of the thought that counts. We appreciate
it. All right. Thank you.
Jean Bethke Elstein, professor of social and political ethics at the University of Chicago. We're going to continue our conversation on moral values and the role they played in the election as we await President Bush's speech at the top of the hour in about 40 minutes from now. So stay with us. This is special coverage from NPR News.